Welcome back, live from the studio. This is podcast 502, this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show, radio show number 27, in case you didn't hear it in the radio. I love to put it up in crystal clear digital audio so people can hear what it sounds like, although we're getting the sound better and better every single week. So here we go with podcast 502, the Bob Davis Podcast radio show replay. Now, this is the podcast with a telescoped version of the 500th podcast commemoration, and in that podcast, I talk a lot about the challenges of growing a business, and one of the biggest challenges for growing a business is keeping clients, showing clients how much they're appreciated. And for a lot of growing businesses, you end up taking people to lunch or dinner. Maybe you can do stuff together like a fishing trip or whatever. A lot of people send stuff out to businesses with their company name on it. Or they do some kind of a boat trip, which is big in the state of Minnesota. Or you can try something new that is social, that is memorable, that your clients will bond with you because of, and they will remember you because they're engaged in something unique and creating something unique at Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed and social setting. What happens is an artist guides your clients through the featured painting step by step, but it's not about art, it's about a social experience. And people come away amazed at what they're able to do while you're getting around to talk to every single one of your clients and spend some time. As I said, Brush Studio events aren't about painting, but about socializing and having fun together. There's room for 55 people there or more, plus catering from Crave in the West End. Brush Studio also features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. It's really a cool place, and it's a fun, sophisticated way to create a new bonding experience for your clients that they will never forget, and they're going to love you for it. So here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, or visit brushstudio.net. You're going to see a video there that explains very clearly what they do and how much fun it is, or you can reach out to Brush Studio, the event planning ninjas, at 952-236-1700, Brush Studio. And I want to thank my client, Brush Studio, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So let's get right to it. Here's segment one of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Live from the studio with the planes. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. To hear more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show, where we bring some of the content from my podcast back to the radio. And I have a question to start the show this week. Have you felt it? A waning interest in the national political scene now that there's only one candidate running in the final few primaries on the Republican side. So on this installment of the Bob Davis Podcast radio show, we're going to switch a little bit and kind of step over the national political scene in the later segments of the show. And we're going to talk about an issue becoming live and local for many cities and towns across the country: unelected regional planning councils that have overwhelming power to control what elected officials in towns and cities and counties do. We're going to talk to a small town mayor in Minnesota who may have put his finger on what is needed to balance the power when it comes to metro-wide planning in big cities and small ones all over the country. Now, this was also a week in which I did my 500th podcast, which is a milestone for me. I'm going to take a segment this week and talk a little bit about being in business for myself, which is a subject I love, and also podcasting and media, specifically the breadth and depth of the subjects and content over the past 500 Bob Davis podcasts, which surprised me. On the national political news front, I don't want to leave that alone. I do want to talk about this a little bit. Don't you find it interesting that all of a sudden you're starting to see some of these pundits and personalities doing everything they can to walk back their endorsements or anti-endorsements of national candidates in the wake of Trump's presumptive nominee status for the Republicans. A lot of you may know who Nate Silver is. He's a statistician who cut his teeth analyzing baseball and then moved into applying his statistical analysis to politics. I think Silver's done some pretty good work, but as I have said before, the guys like Silver, the statisticians and the political scientists who make these predictions, are right most of the time until they're wrong. And it finally happened since Silver predicted Donald Trump didn't have much of a chance to win the Republican primaries. This week, in sort of a mea culpa, which is admirable, but it's a mea culpa nonetheless, he has called for some controls at 538, which is the blog where he publishes all this stuff. But I think it misses the point overall. And I think it's an internal point. First of all, many of these pundits have been and will be eating crow this year and next because early on they either endorse or climbed on a politician's bandwagon, or they climbed on a bandwagon opposed to a politician, and as a result they've made fools of themselves. Of course, with the mea culpa, which are no fun to deliver, also comes the explanations and suggestions for what needs to be done and the kinds of controls that need to be put in place so that this, quote, never happens again. People, the problem isn't statistics, it isn't political science, the problem is ego. And there's nothing wrong with a healthy ego until you start believing, as the old saying goes, your own press. When the ego gets out of control, people believe they possess so much power over others that everyone is waiting to hear what they think about who should be president. The fact is, it's presumptuous for anybody in this business, the media business, to believe that anybody out there gives a damn about who we think should be president or senator or congressman or dog catcher. Your vote is your business, and I think the best any of us can do is to provide you with pertinent information about the candidates and their positions so that you can make whatever decision that you decide to make. And I don't even think we should judge the decision once it's been made. I've said many times that when pundits and personalities endorse candidates, they're just simply not doing their job. For analysts like Nate Silver, who seem to have engaged a little too heavily in editorial considerations early on about how much weight to give certain kinds of polls concerning whether Trump had a chance of winning the presidential preference primaries or caucuses, I would simply suggest that politics is not baseball. Baseball, with its pristine statistics and hits and runs and errors, providing a consistent and almost perfect hermetically sealed world of a game that really hasn't changed too much since it was created more than 100 years ago. So you can compare a game from 1916 to a game from 2016 pretty safely statistically. No, politics is not baseball. The problem with statistical analysis and political scientists is the tendency they have to tell anyone who will listen what will happen in any given election. Here's the thing. Most of the time, I guess you could say that they're probably right. That is, that they are usually able to predict within reason the outcomes of these elections. Until there is a sea change in whatever that roiling mass of humanity known as the electorate actually thinks. Now, the thing is, they call polling, market research, the littlest science, because it employs the least amount of science of all the sciences that we know. Social sciences, you know, physicists laugh at social scientists because of the tools that they use. It's very hard to predict what people are going to do when there is a sea change or there is a palpable change in the direction and in the ideas of how we construct our society. It's very hard to predict what's going to happen, and we're in one of those years where we're in the middle of a political, social sea change in this country. For me, I am interested in having a completely different conversation, which is to talk about where this is going and where it ends up and what we think about that. Because this is one of those periods of time where we're going to end up in a completely different place from where we are now. And I don't want to have to defend where that place finally is. I want to see where we go. I want to experience it, and I want to share that experience rather than spend my time trying to tell you what you should do about this, that, or the other thing, or who you should vote for, or what you should be thinking about this. Anyone who's ever done anything that has anything to do with the public probably knows that They are predictable until suddenly they're no longer predictable, till they change their tune. Back in the days when Led Zeppelin and The Who were filling stadiums and their records were number one, nobody could have envisioned a day when something called disco would take the crown, but it did. No one understands Donald J. Trump's appeal right now, and yet all the experts keep trying to explain it. What if we didn't try to explain it, but just let this thing play out for better or for worse? So, without a dog in the fight, then I can take whatever happens as it is, which actually is more interesting to me, without then having to feel that I have to defend a future presidency for whoever gets elected. Maybe political coverage ought to be more like baseball in this sense. Let's find a seat, let's get settled, let's get a hot dog and a beer, and let's watch the game. And let's talk about what the plays are, rather than who we think is going to win, or what the statistics say will happen, or what the experts say. Maybe that's just too much to hope for, right? Coming up. So when I started podcasting, I don't know what I was thinking. It was more of a hobby than anything. And I actually never thought that I would someday celebrate my 500th podcast. But this week I did. This week I did a 500 podcast retrospective. And there were cuts from all the different podcasts I've done over the years. And for the radio show, I'm not going to put all those pieces in there. If you want to hear the whole retrospective, there's a lot of cool stuff in there from different podcasts, whether it's the closing of Nye's Polonaise Room, which is sort of the retro old school bar in Minneapolis, or the trip to Sturgis. That is podcast 500, available at thebobdavispodcast.com. So the thing about it is, this retrospective took me like 3 days. It's been a crazy week because it took me like 3 days to get this whole thing together and get it done, but I did. So, and if you actually want to hear the retrospective, then visit thebobdavispodcast.com and you can hear the whole thing, podcast 500. What makes podcasting great? Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Back in the studio, live, and I want to mention, yes, I do a lot of yoga for exercise. It certainly, the yoga stuff showed up in the 500th podcast, but I've been practicing yoga for a long time, and there's a lot of dehydration associated with yoga, and you don't know it. You're in crowded rooms of 100 degrees, you're sweating, and because of dehydration, I was always sore, and I see it all the time. I see people talking about headaches, I see people talking about soreness. And the thing is, if you get hydrated properly, then you don't get sore and you can take it to the edge. That's where you grow. That's where you get better. That's where you really find the truth in yoga. And I think that's true with all sorts of athletic disciplines, whether it's CrossFit or SoulCycle, or whether you still play hockey, or whether you love someone who happens to be a collegiate athlete. Let me tell you about Hydrus. As I said, Hydrus transformed my yoga practice because it helped me to practice more and to practice more on the edge. Hydrus makes a huge difference because it gets electrolytes into your system very quickly. They've done tests and they've already found that if you drink a half a quart of water or more than 16 ounces of water before some athletic practice, it can take as long as 30 minutes to get that into your muscles. And that's the reason we have hydration products. Hydrus uses exclusive nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed. They found that people who drink Hydrus get hydrated almost immediately. It's pretty amazing, and it doesn't use sugar. that you find in these other high-performance drinks that get electrolytes into your system. Hydrus, again, helps you take it to the edge because of that. Here's what you do. If you want to know more, join the Performance Hydration Revolution. Click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com, HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com, and it will tell you everything you need to know. And I'm drinking it right now. I love Hydrus, and thanks again for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Okay, here's segment two of the Bob Davis podcast radio show for this week. This is the Bob Davis podcast radio show. To hear more of the Bob Davis podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. You're hearing the Bob Davis podcast radio show. All right, so I talk a lot about being a podcaster, and it's just the latest thing that I've done in media. And one of the things I've learned doing the podcast, as well as this radio show, and from all the years I've been doing media, they are really two different mediums, and they have their individual advantages. Now, I'm one of the few podcasters, I'm lucky to say and blessed to say, who has figured out how to monetize digital audio content on demand. And while I'm not getting rich anytime soon, it supports my podcast habit, so to speak. So looking back over 500 podcasts since the summer of 2009, what are some of the takeaways? So 500 is a big number for me, especially when it's 500 podcasts. I am actually shocked that I've done that many podcasts. And to commemorate it, people said I should do it live from a bar, or I should invite a bunch of people to see a live podcast and go to some eatery somewhere and do that. But the thing is, podcasting is not radio. And watching someone like me, who really knows what they're doing, do a podcast is actually like watching paint dry, because there's a lot that goes into this that is not, you don't just sit down in front of a crowd and do a podcast. I talk a lot about media in these podcasts, the differences between broadcast television and video and broadcast radio and podcasting. And if I've learned one thing in 500 podcasts, it is that there's something special about podcasting. And I don't think it can be captured in a live event at a local eatery or bar with a few friends there. So here's what I decided to do. I decided to go through all 500 podcasts, and this was a mistake because it takes time. Usually I do a podcast on Sunday and then one again on Tuesday night, but I have been basically running around finding different hard drives and going through different computers and finding all 500 of these podcasts, the MP3 files for the podcast. It takes time. It took me Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday to find them, transfer the files, listen to them, and figure out what I wanted to do, and so now I am ready to roll. Now, I thought what I would do is play some excerpts of some of the podcasts that I've done as a way to both introduce the podcast to people who might not have heard them all, and to give those who do listen to the Bob Davis podcast a sense of what I learned while going back through my own archives to try to advance things a little bit. I hate doing podcasts where it's just here's this, that, and the other thing. I want to give you a little bit more than that. What I've learned about podcasting, what I've learned about self-discovery, and what I've learned about being in business for myself. Before this process, to be quite truthful, I wasn't feeling too hot about podcasting or small business. The podcasting issue it has to do with politics. The small business stuff is that you're never where you want to be because you're constantly thinking ahead and where you know where you want to be and you know what you have to get to, but you're not there yet. And so I've learned something by going through all of the podcasts, and it changed my feelings about what I've done and what I've accomplished or what I haven't accomplished. Because what I've learned is, first of all, it's impossible. I'm not going to excerpt all the podcasts, so you're not going to have to sit through that, just some of them. And I picked the ones that I thought were interesting to me. And I was surprised and pleased with the breadth as well as the depth of the podcast that I've done. And it doesn't matter if it was the early podcast from 2009 or 2011 or the later podcasts after I restarted the BobDavisPodcast.com back in 2013. Now, I am not saying, look at me, I'm an amazing human being. I was actually surprised at the topics covered and the depths of those topics, the depth of those topics, given any given day or any given week of podcasting. whether it was on media and broadcasting and working for big corporations and what that's like, starting your own business, exploring the things that I am and was interested in. For example, 4 or 5 election cycles, including 3 presidential elections, the economy, including the stimulus efforts to reintegrate or reignite prosperity, which really never happened, we now know. Foreign policy, including the Arab Spring and the Russians and the Ukraine and Syria and ISIS. The nuts and bolts of politics on both sides of the political fence today, including the deterioration, breakup, and death of what I would describe as the conservative movement, which was done a long time ago. I mean, almost a year ago now, where I just said, this thing is not working. And this is where we are today in American politics of what's wrong with the so-called, you know, right-wing movements. If you listen to the podcast, you'll hear it happen long before it was ever reported in the mainstream media. From the podcasts where I talk about these issues in depth or the News Update podcast, there is actually a lot of information about how these stories developed over the months and years. And I'm kind of proud of those. But I'm not going to include too many of those in this podcast because you can listen to them. It's old information and it doesn't work for this kind of a retrospective. It's the personal interest podcast that I've done that are represented here in Podcast 500. It's not so much politics, although some of that is here with the primary coverage in 2016 on the road, but it's the things that I have experienced in my life. This podcasting, this is a single pursuit. It's something you end up doing by yourself most of the time. It's something that you end up doing, you end up keeping your own counsel in it. You essentially have to, and it's also true for people in any kind of small business, but it's really true with this because this is something that you experience something and then you put it out there in a podcast, and it's a singular pursuit. You don't really necessarily share it with anyone. And I am relentless with sharing most of my life and most of my life experiences through these podcasts. So if something is happening to me, sooner or later it's going to end up on a podcast. And I'm getting more and more interested in as I've said many times, that tape that plays underneath everything, finding those little gems and talking about those things. And I have to say that it would not have been possible without subscribers. I would have done it anyway, but it was great to have people listening and subscribing. It is great to have sponsors, and that's really the thing that drives this. If it hadn't been for the sponsors, I wouldn't be able to do this. Really appreciate it. And if it hadn't been for the people who have contributed, it would have been a lot more difficult, especially the mobile podcast command stuff. The people who contributed money for fuel and money for the truck over the 2 years that I collected donations, as well as friends who have helped me throughout. And sometimes it's been hard to help me because I am not an easy person to help. It would not have been possible without a steel determination to make this work, to make money doing it, and to build a bigger business, which remains a goal for me in the future. One of the things I've learned doing this 500 podcast special is there is a wide variety of podcasts on different subjects. There's a whole world out there to talk about, not just politics, not just one thing, all kinds of people and places. And I'm looking forward to going there and talking about it all in the next 500 podcasts. Coming up, cities and towns all over the country are dealing with overbearing regional planning councils that demand cooperation. In Minneapolis and St. Paul, it's the Met Council. So we're going to talk to a small town mayor who may have figured out how to pull the teeth of the hated Met Council next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Back in the studio, getting out the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show a little late this week because everything got pushed back because of the amount of searching and rendering and pulling excerpts of podcasts off of different hard drives and then having to edit them and put it all together. A labor of love for Podcast 500, but everything got pushed back. Now, if you are a pilot or you love a pilot, and you want that pilot to be safe on takeoffs and landings, or you are the pilot that wants to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. And it is a revolution because all sorts of places that you wouldn't think, people that you wouldn't think, institutions that you wouldn't think are getting it put in their aircraft's avionics systems. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. They tell me that the most important thing for pilots when they turn on final approach is making sure that their angle of attack is right. And most of the time, pilots are trained to kind of feel that out. With the Alpha Systems AOA visual display, you've got a visual display of that angle of attack, and it makes a huge difference. And I'll tell you a little secret. They also have a package that includes an audio indicator as well, which can come in real handy. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. All right, let's get back to segment three. Again, both of these, what's cool about the radio show is editing down as to the absolute bare essentials some of these things that I do, like the interview with Mark Korn, and it shows you the difference between the two mediums. You know, if you want to listen to the whole Mark Korn interview, it's podcast 501. So here's the first half of the Mark Korn interview, which has been edited and set up for the radio show. As the planes, again, continue to land by the broadcast bunker. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, it's becoming a big issue. In Minneapolis and St. Paul, an unelected body called the Metropolitan Council, which started out as a panel to address planning for water and sewer and airports, now has so much power, towns and city councils and county councils can't say no to them. These elected councils aren't afraid of the Met Council. They literally, legally cannot say no. It's an arrangement Vito Corleone might have characterized as making them an offer they can't refuse. Oak Grove, Minnesota Mayor Mark Korn may have figured out how to say no. Tell us about Oak Grove.
Well, Oak Grove is about an 8,500 citizen town, 36 square miles, northern Anoka County. It is a wonderful place to grow up, a community that's part rural, part neighborhoods, part still farms, and a small amount of commercial. I'm one of those guys that I've worked as an engineer, a manager, a business owner now for over 20 years. I'm one of those guys that want to know everything before I feel comfortable talking about it or acting on it or making a decision on it. I've held every volunteer position, Parks Commission Chair, Planning Commission Chair for 15 years. Then I was elected as City Council. I was elected Mayor. Our City Administrator quit before I could fire her. So I volunteered to be the City Administrator. I chaired the Comp Plan rewrites. The Comp Plan is supposed to be the city's leadership's view of how the city's going to develop, change in 10 years. So it's really like, okay, we sit down and say, in the next 10 years, we believe we're going to have this kind of growth in this area, and we're going to develop this way. We're going to have this kind of growth in business or residential and the plans for our city. I've been involved from day one, so I'm not a rube.
Right.
When it comes to leadership in my city, because
well, and you're, the great thing about your story is you've reduced costs and improved efficiency all along. And when you may not know this, but when Mark goes out and speaks and talks about this, it's electrifying for people to hear how somebody. And I don't think it's a question of political orientation. It's your ability to question things. Where were we in some city hall that was brand new? And the thing was huge. And we were walking through there and you looked around and you said, think of all the employees that they can fill this building with.
Yeah, that was for that eminent domain thing down south.
Yeah,
remember
that's
that?
Right, that's right.
We cut our taxes by 34% in the first 4 years of me in my first term. I got reelected mayor this time by 97.5%. I'm very fortunate. I don't call myself a politician. I hate that word. Right. I know I am, but it's not about the limelight for me. It's about bringing a skill set that I've learned and was able to bring my private sector business experience, my problem solving, all that to government leadership, period. Right. I don't care what and how they did it in the past, but if I'm not allowed to ask questions, ask why are they doing things this way, how are they doing it, and are there better ways to do it? And if you're squelched as a leader, then you're not a very good leader.
And I've seen you take calls from constituents while we have been having lunch. So yes. I know. I've seen it in action. My favorite story about you was, and this is near and dear to my heart since I'm the owner of a fire vehicle. Somebody said, we need to get a new fire engine. And you said, well, how many miles does the fire engine have on it that we have? And they said, well, it's only got 60,000 miles on it.
No, it had 12,000 miles on it.
And you said, well, we don't need a new fire engine. What year is it?
Yeah, it was a 96 or something. Yeah, you know, it's decisions like that, okay, it's 10 years old, it's time for a new one. And those kind of things, look, if it's reliable, it goes through service every year, it goes through checks every year.
So people know, where geographically is Oak Grove?
Well, Anoka County, if everybody knows that there's seven county metro counties, if you will, we're in Anoka County. And Anoka County has cities within that county. Within that county, we're an outer northern suburb. There's one more city just north of us called St. Francis.
Okay.
So we're the second to the last city out in the outer ring of Anoka County.
And when we say city, we're not talking about skyscrapers and apartment buildings and shopping centers and things of that nature.
Correct.
What's the biggest development, you know, commercial development in Oak Grove? Isn't that where the Casey's is or whatever it is or down on
yeah,
the
corner? There's a strip mall with a gas station and Bill's Superette, which I love to death. I just go there all the time. They know me first. They know who I am.
Well, sure.
But, you know, it's a great place. There's a lot of neighborhoods. Let's put it that way. Large lots. We have a certain minimum lot size, 2.5 acre overall density. As a minimum guideline. And that's where the struggles with the organization called Met Council. Because I was involved with Met Council as a planning chair before I was elected, we're an appointed position, and I was the chair, I actually help write most of the ordinances for our city.
Okay.
So I've been involved since just after the city became a city. We were a township in 93, we became a city. And then we have to go through, once you become a city, you have to go through planning stages. You have to become, there's certain steps and procedures, and you have to create a comprehensive plan for, basically, it's an overview of how your city is going to develop.
Okay, so what's the big issue with, what's the Met Council doing to you?
Okay. Our issue really came about in 2006 or 2008 when we had to do what's called a 2030 comprehensive plan for the city of Oak Grove. In that comp plan, the Met Council representative, Natalie Steffen, had brought the vision of Met Council to Oak Grove and says, If you want to subdivide your properties, which, by the way, they've allowed us to subdivide everywhere across our city from 10 acres, 20 acres, 50 acres, 150 acres, down to 2.5 acres for the last 25 years. As an owner, I can subdivide my property within the guidelines that are set forth in our ordinance, which are 2.5 acres.
Okay.
Per lot.
Minimum.
Okay. That's including the street.
Well, and why? Because that will keep it a
rural environment.
Okay.
Or a rural
ex-urban.
Type. Yeah, ex-urban. It's not high density by any means, but it still gives that sense of
openness.
Yeah.
And this is what the people of Oak Grove have indicated that they want their town to be like.
The correct.
They don't want They don't want mixed use housing. They don't want apartment buildings. They don't want high density development.
That's correct.
Why is that?
Because the rural nature, the country feel of the neighborhood, we call it a bedroom community.
And people have horses and
people
ATVs
have horses and yeah, we can drive on our streets, our city streets. That was another ordinance that I helped facilitate because it made sense for our community. Because it is larger lots, you have more distance to go to your neighbor. We wanted to be able to have that country feel and be able to do things people in Fridley or Columbia Heights or Northeast Minneapolis, they just can't do.
Coming up, we're going to continue our conversation with Mark Corin, mayor of Oak Grove, focusing on what the Met Council has threatened his city with and how the citizens of Oak Grove and the state of Minnesota might be able to pull the teeth of the Met Council. Next. To hear the full Mark Corin interview, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. It's landing time back at the broadcast bunker. And I just want to, before we get to segment four, I want to thank Hydrus once again for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Click on HydrusPerformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S Performance.com. This is the new high-performance beverage that gets electrolytes into your system very quickly. They're using it at a lot of the colleges. I know Ohio State wrestlers are using it, tennis players, CrossFit athletes. It doesn't matter what you do. I'm actually drinking it right now to keep my throat lubricated for this podcast, and it's amazing what it does. HydrusPerformance.com. And don't forget Brush Studios in the West End in St. Louis Park. If you're looking to show your clients how much you appreciate them, there's a bunch of things you can do. How about doing something that is unique and new and will help you forge a bond with your clients in a unique way? There's no experience necessary. You're going to be amazed at what you can do, and it's really a lot of fun. Reach out to Brush Studio, 952-236-1700. 952-236-1700, or you can visit them online at brushstudio.net, or you can check the banner out at the top of the page at the Bob Davis Podcast page. It shows you what they do, and thanks again for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. All right, here's the second half of the Mark Corin interview this week for the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show segment. It's segment four. Wow, already. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For all the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. If you want to hear more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. So, continuing with the mayor of Oak Grove, Minnesota, Mark Corin, sometimes when things happen in people's towns and cities, they blame elected officials. And as we're going to learn in this segment, it's not always the elected officials we should blame when things go wrong. Maybe it's time to drive a stake through the heart of the beast, the unelected Met Council. And Mark Corin, mayor of Little Oak Grove, Minnesota, may have figured out how to do it. Now, if only the Minnesota Speaker of the House and other powerful politicians would only listen.
In 2008, we had to adopt our 2030 comp plan. And in that comp plan, they forced us, they took 1,100 acres of Oak Grove and said, you will, Oak Grove, taking our arms behind our back and basically a gun behind our heads, and said, you will take 1,100 acres of your city and turn it into three homes per acre. So to adopt our 2030 plan, the first time we went to vote on it, our council denied it. It failed. Then what happened is that our attorney sat down with us and Met Council said, if you don't adopt a plan that we approve, we will do the L word on you. Met Council sued them because they didn't do what they told Met Council they were going to do.
Oh.
When we denied the adoption of our 2030 comp plan, they said, you will adopt a plan that we approve or we will sue you. We're saying that their plan, their 2040 projections are wrong. They don't fit the area. There's no cost justification. There's no planning. And there's no justification at all to force those residents that own property in the MUSA, the municipal sewer system area, to abide by 3 homes per acre. It doesn't fit our city. Because there isn't the growth outer rings, they're going to focus their efforts and their money on the inner rings.
You're a body of elected officials. People have voted you guys in. You've been voted in by a majority. Why can't you just vote to say no to the Met Council?
What frustrates me and a lot of elected officials, and it's not just Oak Grove, it's other mayors and city council members across this state, is that we were elected to be the representative leadership for our community. And I know our city, and I'm not against projections and planning and all that. What I'm objecting to is when we go to the Met Council and we say, this, here's the facts behind what we're asking for our community, do not fit the projections of your system statement for 2040. They're not listening to us. And basically, when we go tell them these things, they know legislative-wise, they don't have to listen to us.
So you're saying that they're an unappointed body that has complete control over the future of your town, and the elected officials in that town have no say in the matter, really?
That's correct.
There's 2 statutes in question, and we're going to talk about those.
Okay. Minnesota Statute 473-146, Subdivision 1, which basically outlines the requirement and what Met Council's rules and what their responsibility is. The problem is that there's another subdivision or an ordinance, a law. There's another law, 473-865, which has to deal with conflict and conflicts with plans. So in other words, they're saying that they have legislative authority based on 473-865. If this is the area that they're pointing their finger at, saying, we don't really care what you mayors and city council members feel or think or act or even know what's best for our communities.
We know what's best.
They know what's best for me and my citizens.
And so I'm telling you, gives them the legal authority to say yes, you will accept
that's
this.
What they're
what's
basing
the statute again?
It's 473.865.
So the fix in this, and just so people understand, a similar issue, and I don't know the specifics legally, is Minneapolis's issue with the Southwest Light Rail is going through a section of the lakes area. The land that the Southwest Light Rail will run through, for the most part, is owned by the Poleads. A lot of people don't know that. And the city council is confronted with a lot of angry taxpayers in Kenwood, which is these are very wealthy people, and most of them are Bernie Sanders supporters. So this is not a conservative district, Kenwood and that area, the lakes area, but they're very concerned about the environment around the lakes. They're very concerned about the same things that the people in your town are concerned about. And the response is, we're going to do this. You don't have any choice. So this isn't just an Oak Grove issue. This is an issue for Minneapolis. It's an issue for St. Paul. It's an issue for any metropolitan area with elected officials that might not agree with the Met Council. So really what has to happen is that the state legislature needs to amend these statutes. And yep. I think everyone's missing the point. We're supposedly reforming the Met Council by saying, well, we're going to change the length of the terms, and we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And it's appointed by the governor, so you are represented. But, you know, we elect the Supreme Court in the state, but we don't elect the Met Council. And so why not, instead of messing around with electing the Met Council, which creates a whole different set of problems, because if we elect the Met Council, we are essentially creating a regional government, which obviates the counties and the cities and to a large degree, the state government. So electing the Met Council doesn't solve the problem, but changing or amending or repealing this statute would what? It would take
would
away
take
their authority.
Teeth. That's correct. Bob, you've known me for quite a while.
Yeah.
And you've known that I've always stood up. And I'll be the first to say I've changed my mind on certain things if new facts come in. But in this case, in our situation, just like a lot of situations, we look at things from a projected planning, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. What's going on in our city absolutely, positively doesn't make sense. Taking that order, that statute out of the laws of the state of Minnesota would take away their teeth in forcing cities to not have any say. I've never been one to sit down, shut up. When I've been told, don't ask why, don't question how come, this infuriates me beyond belief, because my residents, and I view this as a taking. What's happening in that 1,100 acres of our city is essentially what Met Council is saying. Pure and simply, we have no plans for spending money to get a pipe in that area. There's no plans for growth. There's not enough growth to even service the existing system. And I ask them to reconsider forcing us to have that 1,100 acres of high density. And I talked and I asked and begged for their understanding that it's not good planning. Their poor planning doesn't justify taking the rights of my residents' property rights away.
Who's your state representative in Oak Grove?
Kurt Dowd or Michelle Benson.
Who's Michelle Benson? She's the senator.
Yes.
Have they indicated any interest in this at all?
Well, I feel helpless, Bob. I really do. I feel that I've given most of my adult life to the city of Oak Grove residents. I've been active in the Republican leadership in BPOU. I've been a delegate. I do all this stuff to understand and learn and bring what I've learned as an engineer and planning and all that stuff into reasonable growth projections, reasonable planning projectives and ordinances and laws. There are a number of laws that don't make sense. The law that allows a non-elected body to get away with telling elected people what they're going to do, regardless of their understanding of your own community, that's got to change, and it's got to change immediately.
That's going to do it for this installment of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. If you want to hear the whole Mark Korn interview, check out the BobDavisPodcast.com. It's podcast 501. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com, and I'll be back next week, same time, same station. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Between us 6 million seasons. Gotta run, gotta run, gotta run, and make it and die. All right, thanks for listening to Podcast 502, the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show in clean, clear digital sound for you. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show on AM 1280, The Patriot in Minneapolis. More affiliates as we get them. Also, GCNLive.com. And thank you for listening on iTunes and subscribing on iTunes and Stitcher and also TuneIn and BlogTalkRadio.com. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following following the Bob Davis Podcast on Facebook and Twitter and commenting on Facebook and Twitter. And of course, my favorite social media, Instagram, where I am bdavis7843. And of course, thanks for your donations, as mentioned in this show, at thebobdavispodcast.com, exclusively for Mobile Podcast Command. Thanks for listening to Podcast 502.